Folks, we just saw the short film It's Time for Tea by Matthew J. Kaplan, and we're going to share our thoughts about it right now, us, the group on NonPro. We're going to go spoilery, so if you haven't seen it, watch it. If you're so fortunate enough to see it in a film festival or what have you, and you've stumbled upon this podcast, or if you're part of the cast or crew, hey, this is our thoughts about it. I'm Frank, and James Pope and Pete are in the studio with me, and we're going to talk about this short. What do we think? What are our blanket thoughts?
I liked it. I was really, really enjoyed watching it. It was really interesting. It really made me think, which I think is cool, always for a short film.
Yeah, it's less than 10 minutes, and surprised that it came together so well.
I think it was very enjoyable, especially if you're like the Twilight Zone kind of short slices of creepy stories.
Mm-hmm.
Creepy or unsettling stories, maybe.
So we talked about this briefly together before we started doing the recording. James, you have a particularly Twilight Zone-y take on what's going on in this short.
I feel like I always go for the super extreme. Yeah. So my thought is that they're both dead, both the daughter and the wife. And well, Pope here pointed out, well, there's some reasons why that might not work. I think it's a neat twist, you know.
Uh-huh.
You went way more
supernatural with this than I did.
I always do. Yeah. I'm always like, jump off the deep end.
Do you watch like real, like...
What if they're aliens?
Okay.
What if it was they were all aliens?
How is being dead more supernatural than other stuff that happens in this?
So I actually thought it was just an examination of dealing with trauma. Actually, Pete, you said an awesome thing right while we're watching it, and it's obviously the story is about Alan and how Alan is dealing with his grief of the passing of his daughter. But like in the middle of Rebecca and the doctor talking about this in an aside in the kitchen, I almost said this all takes place in one location, but there are two locations effectively. There's that little area and then there's
the
kitchen.
If you count the house.
Yeah, all right. So off to the side when they're discussing it, Pete's like, gee, I hope you're... What was it that you said?
I hope... When he's talking about...
how Alan...
This is how Alan processes grief.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's best if you you also enter into his world so that we can pull him out.
Yeah.
And I'm just sitting there thinking, boy, I hope your way of processing grief includes this bull crap.
Yeah, putting him in this crap. Because, like, yeah, I'm looking at this. It occurred to me until I heard you say it. I'm like, yeah, Rebecca really has to do a lot of the emotional labor here to put up with that. I guess it makes sense. He seems to be the most helpless. Pope, you haven't said anything. I'm sorry. I'm talking over.
I mean, I feel like there's a lot of ambiguity about the movie that we can really explore where, like, I don't think we know what's going on at all with anyone.
Yeah.
Where I don't know who or what the doctor is. Like, is he a supernatural kind of... is he a medium of some sort? Like, if she's dead,
right,
because he can interface with both of them, although she was talking with June.
Yeah.
And, you know, is she dead? Is it like The Shining, where, like, she gets absorbed into the phone, and that's why she leaves, and she can come back for a play date?
So we briefly got into this, but I did not have a supernatural reading of this. I thought it was two people dealing with grief, and one person who kind of falls into himself and becomes childish, childlike, and another person who kind of like is at first just unwilling or for good reason to cope because she's dealing with the trauma of her significant other also having to deal with this loss. And instead she has a disassociative moment. I think it's maybe just saying, hey, sometimes you need to go a little crazy and that's it. I think sometimes you just need to disassociate and push it aside. I don't even know if that's healthy. I doubt it's healthy, but it works.
So in your theory, the whole blue light, once the blue light starts, it's just like a total psychological break for Rebecca.
I think so, which makes this ending, again, like Pope said, ambiguous, but like, I think she's in a better place.
I really feel like she just went to go hit the bar. I mean, like, it's plausible you could think she's dead or whatever else could have happened, but I think she just went to go hit the bar.
Pope's and the hardcore hallucinogens were the cause of this whole thing. No.
Oh, you mean like there was just a little bit of that comical
really
bottle.
Real.
Yeah, the comical bottle of pills actually had a little bit of LSD, which licks her palm. Yep, that's awesome. So I like the fact there's a lot of different ways to read this. I like the performances. Dr. Herman was interesting. Mickey Ryan plays Dr. Herman. And so, all right, it is a crazy person. I don't like using that word, but whatever. It's a, quote, air quotes, crazy person having a tea party. What does that immediately evoke to anyone listening to this?
Alice in Wonderland.
Alice in Wonderland. And there's something about Mickey Ryan's look in this film. Oh, he looks like a Mad Hatter. I'm like, oh, is this going to be a thing? Is this going to be a thing? and it's never like on the nose, right? It's never that blunt. But I was thinking about it the entire time. And he's definitely a person who facilitates craziness. There's a little bit of drink this, eat that. I like that. I like Maya Rosewood's dealing, like, shouting down everyone else who's just being crazy.
So I got a little caught up for a second when, you know, we're first entering the house and we see the pictures of the daughter. And, you know, that leads us into the story. But I stopped for a second because it kind of looked like it wasn't a person so much as, like, they used a Snapchat filter to combine the little girl.
Oh, I wonder.
So, like, it actually looked like the two of them put together.
I feel like that's a lot of work. I don't think that's true, but I would be curious if that's what they did. And if you're a real little girl, I'm sorry that we thought you were a Snapchat filter. That was just because it was going by real quick. Yes, that's an interesting. I never thought I'd have to apologize. For All right. And what do we have to say about the most important character in the entire film? Of course, Gaffy.
I mean, I'm going to tell you, that moment took me by entire surprise.
Yeah.
I definitely was not prepared for a dog man to come through the door.
There's very few things played by a beloved friend of the station, Patrick Devaney.
By far the low point of the film.
Of course. Yes.
It's hysterical how, like, you know, it was like kind of PG and just went straight to R once the dog comes in. You know, you got stealing and cursing and, you know, all kinds of fun stuff.
Yep. It's interesting. An interesting film. I'm whenever you watch a short film, you wonder, like, What are you going to get out of it? What are people going to say? And when you stop and you talk to the people who watched it with you and get completely different, I did not get the Twilight Zone cut.
No?
Not at all. I'm so all shocked that you did. But I'm like, it works. It tracks. I understand where you're looking at it. And in fact, maybe there is very much a Twilight Zone the movie aspect to the way it's shot in parts. Does anyone even get that reference? Yeah, there's it's as if, you know, like the classic Twilight Zone updated with the more bright, vibrant colors and what have you. I feel like Busby is something. It rings a bell, that little phone, that toy phone that they've gotten. But if it was a reference, it was just in the back of my mind. But yeah, overall, I think it is a interesting film. And I just realized that there is a credit for a animal wrangler. Mackenzie Porter was the animal wrangler on the set. What? Was there an animal in this? I mean, other than Patrick Devaney?
I was going to say, I'm assuming she was just looking after Pat.
Got it. There's also a stuffed animal wrangler, which, of course, very important job. Nicole Porter, you did an upstanding job. James, you have some research for us?
I did. So I looked up Busby, and Busby Toys is actually a toy company that makes toys, particularly very popular. Where the company split between here in Hong Kong, and they're kind of like a
chief export LSD lace plastic phones.
Competitor with Hasbro.
All right.
That's spelled differently, though, isn't it?
What, Busby?
Yeah. Isn't that B-E-E?
Yes, it's B-E-E.
The toy company, as opposed to B-Y, as it appears in the film.
Oh, it appears in the film as BY?
Yeah. That's,
well, that I already have pulled up, actually, is a orange cartoon talking bird as part of the post office telecommunications, which later became British Telecommunications, which has a red phone.
Oh, man.
So I don't know if that's a callback to a mascot like that or, you know, just a fun cutesy kid name.
Oh, man. This keeps getting deeper and deeper. What's happening? You blew our minds. All right, so great short film. If you find it, if it's airing in a local film festival, definitely check it out. And
if you have a film festival, seek them out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
This has been a non-productive media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.